This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It's almost as scary as watching your dog growl at the wall and realize he sees something you don't. Get a quote at geico.com.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Stimulus discussions are over. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Wednesday, October 7. Thanks for being with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump appears to have drawn the curtain on another round of coronavirus aid from Congress. He's told his top negotiators to end the bipartisan talks for now.
Despite his battle with COVID-19, President Trump still plans to debate challenger Joe Biden next week in Miami. Hear what each camp is saying.
Sad note from the music world, legendary rock and roll guitarist Eddie Van Halen has died of cancer at age 65. We'll have reaction.
And America's Main Street Revival is on life support in many communities like Emporia, Kansas, thanks to government pandemic restrictions.
And it's been hard because if you look at a community like Emporia, they have all these like very special events. And what it's been able to do is create this ecosystem of small businesses that make, you know, they're serving local residents. Emporia has a university, but it also makes people come to Emporia.
Ruth Simon at the Wall Street Journal on America's Main Street Revival going into reverse. President Trump appears to have put an end to ongoing negotiations over another coronavirus relief bill until after Election Day. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
On Twitter, the president wrote that he's instructed top representatives to end bipartisan talks. Later, Mr. Trump called on Congress to approve additional assistance to businesses. He also supports providing another stimulus check to many Americans. Democrats have largely resisted piecemeal bills, preferring a larger package. Recent economic data have shown the pace of recovery slowing, which many economists attribute at least in part to a lack of additional fiscal support. Stocks turned lower on Mr. Trump's tweets after trading higher earlier in the day. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. The call to end the talks came hours after Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell warned of dire economic consequences if Congress and the White House don't provide additional support in the wake of the pandemic. President Trump is vowing to return to the campaign trail as soon as next week and expects to debate Democratic challenger Joe Biden as scheduled in 8 days. The Trump team has suggested the Miami debate next Thursday be held outside. Campaign Communications Director Tim Murtaugh was on Fox News.
The campaign remains at full speed, led by the vice president. And when the president comes back to the campaign trail, which we hope will be very soon, he will get right back into it. And we will be very, very happy to see him.
The CDC says people infected with COVID-19 can stop isolating after 10 days have passed since the onset of symptoms, as long as they haven't had a fever in 24 hours and their other symptoms are improving. For severe cases, the CDC says a person can be contagious for up to 20 days. Mr. Biden was asked if he felt safe debating.
I'll be guided by the guidelines of the Cleveland Clinic and what the docs say the right thing to do if and when he shows up for debate.
Speaking of debates, the vice presidential candidates square off tonight. A plexiglass barrier will separate Mike Pence and Kamala Harris at the University of Utah. President Trump has continued his defiant approach to COVID-19 since testing positive, thrilling his base, but worrying voters he may need if he is to secure a second term in November. Insight from Jim Antle, politics editor at the Washington Examiner. Jim, how do you see it?
Well, the president obviously wants to project an image of strength and confidence and emphasize the fact that he's beaten COVID and he thinks the country can beat it, which, you know, is a message that resonates with a lot of people and is certainly an argument to be worth making during the pandemic, which has a lot of people concerned. I think the problem for the president, or at least the risk for the president, is that there is a level of public anxiety about the coronavirus that he has sort of downplayed, or he just doesn't feel the same sense of anxiety that the public does, or he is trying to encourage the public to be less nervous about it than they are without much effect so far. And so the risk obviously then becomes you know, if the public is really scared of this stuff and you're telling them not to be afraid, instead of not being afraid, they may simply think you're not taking the issue very seriously.
Yeah. So at this point, though, are there enough undecideds that this incident matters, enough undecided voters?
Well, I think that there is a small slice of undecided voters, and I think that when you look at certain voting blocks that went pretty heavily for Trump in 2016, such as the over 65 crowd, they're pretty concerned about the coronavirus. They're in a high-risk group for the coronavirus, and they're not necessarily working. Many of them are retired, so they're not necessarily as concerned about the lockdowns and the economic fallout from that. So these are voters who have sort of drifted over to Joe Biden, and Trump needs some of them to come back. And so that's what you worry about. If people are focused on COVID, number one, the public as a whole doesn't judge his response to have been very effective. And number two, you have those senior citizens and other voters, particularly in swing states, who seem to be much more nervous about what's going on than the president himself is. So that really runs the risk that he can't attract those voters, he can't win those voters back in time for November 3rd.
We're speaking with Jim Antle, politics editor at the Washington Examiner. His piece is called Trump Coronavirus Defiance Delights Supporters but Concerns Most Voters. I thought it was an interesting observation, too. Each staffer, say, in his inner circle that now comes down with the coronavirus is a reminder to some that he didn't handle this well.
That's right. It certainly at least amplifies the Democrats' messaging, right? So the Democrats are saying he didn't take it seriously. He downplayed it. He tried to turn the page too quickly to economic reopening, and things like that. And so his willingness to have a bunch of events where there aren't that many people wearing masks, where there's minimal social distancing, that would look fine, I think, if nobody was getting sick. But you are seeing people starting to get sick. Now, nobody in his inner circle yet has seemed to have gotten seriously ill. And many of these people, you know, Hope Hicks is fairly young. Mm-hmm. Kayleigh McEnany is fairly young. These are not people necessarily in high-risk groups. So I think we should expect them to recover pretty fully within a week or two. But certainly it keeps reminding people, keeps reminding voters of an issue where they have a lot of concern about the president.
Okay, so to play the other side of my question then, if each staffer that comes down with coronavirus is a reminder to some that the president did not handle this well, is it also proof, perhaps, depending on how it plays out, that we've overreacted to the coronavirus if, say, everybody recovers?
And that is certainly the argument that the president wants to make. And I think that it's an argument that has gotten a receptive hearing among his base.
Thanks, Jim. Jim Antle, politics editor at the Washington Examiner. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
For the ones working tirelessly to keep their coworkers safe. For the ones rising to new challenges. For the ones rebuilding stronger than before. Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry. Free access to product specialists, safety recovery guides, and 24/7 support. It's part of our commitment to help you adapt and recover in these challenging times. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for being with us. Another rock and roll legend has passed. Eddie Van Halen, the guitar player whose band emerged from the Sunset Strip music scene in L.A. in the early 1970s to stand atop the genre for a decade, died of cancer yesterday. His death was announced by his 29-year-old son, Wolfgang, a bass player for the band, which is known for songs like Jump and Ain't Talking About Love. Frontman David Lee Roth on Twitter wrote, quote, "What a long, great trip it's been." Eddie Van Halen was born in Amsterdam in 1955, studied classical piano, after moving to Pasadena with his family in the 1960s. After switching to guitar, he and his older brother Alex eventually formed Van Halen in the mid-70s. Known for his two-handed tapping technique, Eddie Van Halen earned a place along Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, and Jimmy Page as one of rock's most celebrated guitarists. In 2012, readers of Guitar World magazine voted him the greatest of all time. Eddie Van Halen was 65. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Trump reversed course last night and urged Congress to approve a series of coronavirus relief measures that he would sign, including a new round of $1,200 stimulus checks. Earlier in the day, he had halted talks between top Democrats and Republicans until after the election, which appeared to have killed the chances of a new package. Both announcements by the president were made on Twitter.
Number two.
White House senior advisor Stephen Miller has tested positive for COVID-19, the latest case of coronavirus reported among President Trump's inner circle since the president announced he had the virus last week. Several of the nation's top military leaders are quarantining after attending meetings in the Pentagon with a Coast Guard admiral who tested positive, forcing generals and admirals to work from home as the virus spreads across the executive branch.
Number three.
The FDA has published guidance detailing what's required for the emergency authorization of a coronavirus vaccine after the advice to pharmaceutical companies was delayed by a White House review. Drug makers must provide data showing they followed clinical trial participants for a median of 2 months after their final vaccine injection. The agency also wants companies to submit vaccines for authorization only after at least 5 severe cases of COVID-19 have been seen in volunteers who got a placebo. The requirements underscore why it's unlikely a vaccine could clear the agency before Election Day. Hurricane Delta, a slightly weakened but still dangerous Category 3 storm, is barreling toward Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula with winds of 120 miles per hour. While the exact track of the storm remains uncertain, there is a risk of dangerous storm surge, wind, and rainfall along the coast from Louisiana to the Florida Panhandle beginning tomorrow night, Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards.
This is a very serious storm. A major hurricane.
The National Hurricane Center recommends residents monitor forecasts frequently. The Lakers overcame a sloppy first half to beat the Heat 102-96 last night in Game 4 of the NBA Finals and now lead the series 3-1. LeBron James scored 28 and had 12 rebounds and 8 assists. And in the WNBA, the Seattle Storm swamped the Las Vegas Aces 92-59 to sweep the best of 5 finals. Seattle's Breanna Stewart led all scorers with 26 on 10 of 14 shooting, and Jewel Lloyd added 19. 39-year-old Sue Bird had 5 points and 7 assists.
Still filling it up at the
39.
Age of 39. Are you kidding me? It was a 33-point margin of victory, too.
Yeah, that wasn't even. Yeah, they're pretty good.
No drama. To say that 2020 has been a year of uncertainty is an understatement, right? The way we work together changed overnight. Businesses learned pretty quickly that to adapt, they need a new way to get the essential resources they need. That's how Fiverr can help. Fiverr's online marketplace connects you with freelancers for hundreds of digital services. Things like graphic design, web programming, film editing, and a lot more. And there's no guessing games. You customize your search by service, deadline, price, reviews, whatever matters to you. And you know the cost up front. No negotiating at all. Whether you're launching your first business, scaling your current business, or in need of extra support to complete a project, Fiverr's global network of on-demand freelance talent has worked with the most influential brands in the world and is here to help. Check out Fiverr.com and receive 10% off your first order by using my code Gordon. Find all the digital services you need in one place at Fiverr.com, code Gordon. Again, that's Fiverr.com and code Gordon. Next time you get a credit card bill, see if this is your trend. Despite the Federal Reserve cutting the federal funds rate to near 0% earlier this year, many retail card APRs, especially the highest rates at 29.9%, have remained unchanged. More from Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com. Ted, what's going on here?
This is an important thing to be aware of as we enter the holiday shopping season, because I'm sure that retailers will be pushing these aggressively, both in person and online. And we find that a lot of times store credit cards have much higher interest rates than general purpose cards. The average retail credit card charges about 24%, and that's up from about 20% for general purpose cards. Clearly, all these rates are high. Store cards are higher. Some of them are even in the 30% range.
Wow. All right, so there's always been that difference.
right where the store credit cards are higher than the general interest ones, but how come they haven't budged?
I think that risk is really the big reason here. We know that banks are very nervous about the state of the economy and jobs and perhaps not getting paid back. So even though the Fed has cut interest rates, a lot of these store cards have kept their rates high for new customers. And I think it reflects the kind of businesses that some of them are in. The highest rates are from a bunch of jewelry stores, including Kay, Zales, and a few other brands owned by Signet Jewelers. They're at 29.99%. So you picture expensive jewelry, engagement rings, you know, things that there's a big dollar value there, so obviously they want to get paid back. The other ones are Big Lots and Discount Tire. And I think in both of those cases, there could be a sense of desperation, unfortunately, that like if your fridge breaks down and you don't have the money but you need to finance it, that's expensive. And same thing if you need a new set of tires. So all those companies came in at about 30%, all of them unchanged from a year ago.
We're speaking with Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com. We're talking about this new survey they have, which shows that interest rates on these store credit cards have largely remained unchanged, even though the Federal Reserve has cut the federal funds rate to near 0%. So does it make sense then to even have these store credit cards anymore?
Rule number one for me would be pay these bills in full. Make sure that you're avoiding interest. I know it's easier said than done, but if you need to carry a balance, you're better off with something else. Maybe seek out a low rate credit card from a credit union. If you have good credit, you can get rates maybe in the 7-10% range. There's also this new class of buy now, pay later companies like Affirm and Afterpay. They're not perfect either, but they often have lower interest rates. Now, if you can pay your credit card bills in full, then store cards sometimes make sense because you're avoiding the high interest rates. Some of them offer 5% cash back at their stores. So if you're loyal to Amazon or Target or Best Buy or Gap or a store like that, that can be a good return. The other example is if they give you a nice discount off your first purchase.
Yeah.
Don't do it to save 10% off a $100 purchase. That's not good enough. But if you're buying a lot of merchandise, maybe you know a lot of holiday shopping or appliances or renovations, then it might make sense. But again, you want to avoid those interest rates.
Thanks, Ted. Ted Rossman at creditcards.com. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. We've heard for years that it's important to have a diversified portfolio, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that kind of thing. But if you've ever looked at a breakdown of the most successful portfolios, you'll typically see real estate. So why isn't it one of the first asset classes you consider when you're looking to diversify? Well, simple. It hasn't been available to investors like you and me until now, thanks to Fundrise. Whether you're new to real estate investing or a veteran, Fundrise can help. Fundrise is an investing platform that makes investing in high quality, high potential real estate as easy as investing in your favorite stock or mutual fund. Fundrise manages more than $1 billion in assets for more than 130,000 investors with a team of real estate professionals that carefully vets real estate projects. Start building your better portfolio today. Get started at fundrise.com/Gordon to have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. That's fundrise.com/Gordon to have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. Fundrise.com/Gordon.
Exclusive stories and unique perspectives. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, October 7. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. President Trump tells negotiators to end stimulus talks until after the election. Hurricane Delta targets Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula as the Gulf Coast expects a tomorrow night landfall. Vice presidential debate tonight in Utah. Seattle Storm are WNBA champs. Rocket star Russell Westbrook reportedly left an $8,000 tip for hotel staff at the Grand Floridian. And with the death of legendary rock guitarist Eddie Van Halen, here's some of his famous quotes, including a less than flattering one about a fellow legend. That story in about 20 minutes. Time for a business update, and it's brought to you by Grainger. For all the ones who get it done, there's Grainger, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, plus 24/7 customer support and product specialists always ready to answer any question. Call or visit Grainger.com.
Many small-town downtowns experienced something of a revival in recent years thanks to small businesses taking a chance. They brought much-needed growth to spots that for decades had lost ground to larger cities, shopping malls, big box stores, and most recently, the internet. Ruth Simon, senior special writer at the Wall Street Journal, says how their owners respond to the pandemic will shape the future of main streets across the U.S. and will ultimately help determine how well these towns come out of the resulting economic downturn. She focused on Emporia, Kansas. Ruth, what's happening there?
So Emporia is one of these small rural communities that for many years had been in decline. They were hit by the arrival of interstate highways, which made it easy to go farther away to do your shopping, big box stores, online ordering, even before that, shopping malls. But they had rebuilt themselves. They had been working very hard to strengthen their main street by focusing on niche businesses and on experiences, lots of bars and restaurants, lots of specialty shops, and lots of special events that would have you go there. But it's been hard since the pandemic hit.
All right, so there was somebody in your story who said the pandemic could set back that area about a generation, which I thought was astonishing.
Right. I mean, it's been hard because if you look at a community like Emporia, they have all these like very special events. They have this gravel bicycle ride. They have this disc golf open. And what it's been able to do is create this ecosystem of small businesses that make, you know, they're serving local residents. Emporia has a university, but it also makes people come to Emporia. And so the health of these businesses and maintaining their health is very crucial to these communities.
All right, so you referenced the disc golf, which saw a ton of interest in, I guess, a spike in sales. And then there were some of the other shops who were just kind of left desperate, right?
Right, and so what's interesting with the disc golf business is when I talked to the founder and owner of the business, one of the things he said was, initially, when cases were rising and we were seeing stay-at-home orders, he sent a bunch of his employees home and he started thinking about cutting salaries, doing furloughs. But in fact, lots of people were looking for something to do that was a safe sport outside, so orders exploded. So he's been an unlikely beneficiary of the pandemic, though. I'm sure, like everyone, he would be happy if it hadn't happened. But if you think about bars and restaurants, it's been very hard. One of the bar owners I talked to, you know, she makes her living selling, offering music, live music, and having, you know, selling, you know, regular domestic beer, and you need a lot of customers to make that work, and it's been really hard.
We're speaking with Ruth Simon, senior special writer at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called America's Main Street Revival Goes into Reverse, Cutting a Small Town Lifeline. She took a look at Emporia, Kansas. What about sales tax revenue? I'm sure folks have their eye on that as well.
So Emporia is doing okay in terms of its sales tax collections. But what you're seeing is they sort of mirror this shift in spending where sales tax revenue that's related to online purchases has gone up. At clothing and shoe stores, it's gone down. Fast food outlets, that's done better. Bars and restaurants, you know, where you're sitting down, they've been hurt.
All right, so anybody take a stab at what's going to happen to Emporia in the coming weeks or months?
You know, the businesses are fighting very hard. The community raised funds to help them. They have a Main Street organization that is trying to encourage small businesses there to apply for all the grants they can or all the aid they can and to shift online and try new marketing things. I think some of it, you know, businesses that were already vulnerable, we've seen a couple of them close up. And for the rest of them, I think it depends on how long the pandemic lasts and when the recovery begins. So it's hard to know, but they're watching the Christmas season closely.
Thanks, Ruth. Ruth Simon, senior special writer at the Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, the children's song used as punishment for inmates. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It is time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we've seen plenty of Guinness records broken recently, mostly for bizarre stunts and incredible athletic feats. Here's a girl who just broke a very big record just for being her. 17-year-old Macy Curran of Cedar Park, Texas, was certified by Guinness as having the world's longest legs for a female, as well as the longest legs on a teenager. Curran's left leg measures 4 feet, 5 1/4 inches long, while her right leg is slightly shorter. The girl said she comes from a tall family, but none of her relatives match her 6-foot-10-inch stature. Macy said she hopes to someday set the Guinness record for the world's tallest professional model.
Man. Wow.
Yeah, she said she didn't have like any big growth spurts or anything like that. Like, she was just taller than everybody to start with.
Yeah.
Like, there were pictures of her, I guess, in preschool where she's like a head taller than everybody else in preschool.
Okay.
And then just grew like 4 or 5 inches a year every year. Jeez. Until she, you know, got to be 6'10" at 17.
Well, what she doesn't call it a spurt, but like 4 to 5 inches for an average person would be a spurt, but she had them every year.
It seems. It's not a spurt, I guess, when you have it all every year.
That's stunning. Almost 4.5 feet.
Yes.
Long.
Just her legs.
Just those legs.
Yeah, I know some people
that's
who
like
are
up to my ribs.
I know some people who are, you know, around that height or just slightly taller than that. So that's kind of crazy.
That's incredible. Wow.
And is forcing someone to listen to Baby Shark akin to cruel and unusual punishment? An Oklahoma prosecutor thinks so, and he's indicted 2 former Oklahoma jail employees and their supervisor on misdemeanor charges, alleging that inmates were secured to a wall with their hands cuffed behind them while playing the song on a loop at a loud volume for hours and hours. There were 2 separate incidents of this punishment alleged to have happened in November and December of last year. For those who've tried to block it from their memory, the Baby Shark song gained huge popularity a couple years ago after the company Pinkfong released its first video online. The video has since been viewed more than 6.5 billion times.
Wow. That's almost one time for every person on the planet. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, nearly a million times probably by me alone. First because of my kids, and then now, you know, doing stories about Baby Shark that we've had on the show. We've had a bunch of Baby Shark related stories. It seems like
interesting that the judge would say this, or the prosecutor would say this, that's torture.
Not only that, but I think the prosecutor said that he was trying to find a felony charge for this. That
really?
This is only a misdemeanor. Like, said that this is so bad that it should have been a felony, but
I
guess couldn't make that charge stick.
Wow. Well, may I nominate another song or music?
Sure.
Anything by Drake.
There you go.
In my book.
Knew that was coming.
Yeah, would be considered akin to torture. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to 2 world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, It's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, see how we can help at planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Hey, glad you're with us. You know, there are more ways than ever to connect to America's First News. You can download the This Morning with Gordon Deal app from the Apple or Google app stores. You can also tell Alexa, Google, or Siri to play This Morning with Gordon Deal. Work has changed drastically under the coronavirus pandemic, as you know, with millions of jobs eliminated and many more altered entirely. But CNBC.com says shifting demands and different ways of working have paved the way for new openings. It looked at a new post-pandemic workforce report from McKinsey & Company that surveyed hundreds of business executives about where they plan to increase hiring following the pandemic. More than 4 in 5 employers said they plan to hire for more health and safety roles in the coming months. Top positions within that included on-site distancing or sanitization monitors and workforce health and safety operators. Meanwhile, more than 2/3 of respondents said they expected to hire more technology and automation professionals. The most sought-after areas of expertise: artificial intelligence, digital customer experience, Internet of Things, and the cloud. And finally, 70% of executives said they expect to employ more contractors and temporary workers on site within the next 2 years. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Trump last night said he's willing to pass several independent coronavirus relief measures, including a new round of stimulus checks, hours after pushing for a pause in negotiations on a new aid package. He tweeted that if Congress sent him a standalone bill for stimulus checks, he'd sign it. Earlier in the day, Trump rejected a proposal from House Democrats and called on congressional Republicans to hit the brakes on the negotiations until after the election.
Number two.
Vice President Mike Pence and Democratic challenger California Senator Kamala Harris are poised to meet for a debate that will offer starkly different visions for a country confronting escalating crises. The face-off tonight in Salt Lake City is the most highly anticipated vice presidential debate in recent memory. Meanwhile, President Trump said he's preparing to debate Joe Biden in Miami next week. Biden says that shouldn't happen if Trump is still testing positive for COVID-19.
I think we're going to have to follow very strict guidelines. Too many people have been infected, and it's a very serious problem.
Tonight, a plexiglass barrier will separate Pence and Harris.
Number three.
Early voting numbers show people are rushing to cast ballots ahead of the November 3rd election at an unprecedented pace, indicating a possible record turnout. With 4 weeks to go before Election Day, more than 4 million people have already voted, more than 50 times the number at this time in 2016. The early surge has led experts to predict a record turnout of about 150 million, representing 65% of eligible voters. That would be the highest rate since 1908. A grand jury has indicted the St. Louis couple who displayed guns while hundreds of racial injustice protesters walked on their private street. Mark and Patricia McCloskey have been charged with felony unlawful use of a weapon. They were featured speakers at the Republican National Convention. Eddie Van Halen, the guitar virtuoso whose blinding speed, control, and innovation propelled his band Van Halen into one of hard rock's biggest groups and became elevated to the status of rock god, has died at the age of 65 of cancer. With his distinct solos, Eddie Van Halen fueled the ultimate California party band and helped knock disco off the charts starting in the late 70s. Van Halen is among the top 20 best-selling artists of all time.
Quick Van Halen story. In high school, when the song Panama came out, mm-hmm. I incorrectly was singing it as Animal. I thought the song was Animal. And so a very, very smart guy, much brighter than me, corrected me and told me it was Cannonball.
Oh.
Cannonball. Right. It wasn't until like a year later I learned that it was actually
Panama. I'm glad you
straightened
that out. Yeah.
6 minutes now in front of the hour. On the passing of a guitar hero, we take a look at some famous quotes from Eddie Van Halen as compiled by azquotes.com about fellow guitar legend Jimmy Page. Eddie Van Halen said, quote, "Jimmy Page is an excellent producer, but he plays like he's got a broken hand and he's 2 years old." He also reportedly said, "Rock stars come and go. Musicians play until they die." Regarding guidance for guitar players, he once said, "You only have 12 notes. Do what you want with them." Another one, "If you want to be a rock star or just be famous, then run down the street naked. But if you want music to be your livelihood, then play, 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 and play." He referenced three parts to the creative process: inspiration, execution, and the release. Final quote from the late, great Eddie Van Halen, quote, "I'm just a guitarist in a kick-ass rock and roll band. What more could I ask for?" That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. It's October, and what does that mean? Well, it's Geico-ween, of course. Don't be spooked by high rates on car insurance. Geico is brewing up spellbinding savings that they're crafting just for you. See how much you could save. Get a quote today at geico.com.